Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 89, Book of the Century Club. Idea for the show comes from a book, The 100 Most Influential Books Ever Written, The History of Thought from Ancient Times to Today, by Martin Seymour -Smith. That's with a little dash, not the word hyphen. Pretty much going to be going down the list from 1 to 100. Books like this make me realize there's a lot to learn, or from the Taoist perspective, a lot to unlearn. Perhaps now you're already wondering, what's number one, what's number two, what's 100? Well, you'll soon find out. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. It was about a year ago to this day that was at a poetry event, and there was a little raffle, and this book was one of the prizes I got, by Martin Seymour Smith. The 100 Most Influential Books Ever Written, The History of Thought from Ancient Times to Today. And this came out in 1998. I have not read the book. I have barely looked at the book, but thought it would be interesting to run down the top 100. And one note, one thing that came to mind while looking at this is the lack of the native representation, which sort of, there's a lot of Asian, and anyway, I just, you know, in my recent years of learning of the Great Law of Peace, Dekanawida, the Haudenosaunee, and the Thanksgiving address, and you know, other texts such as that there's a whole native perspective. But in any case, a little bit from the introduction, and the key word here is the most influential. This book does not provide a list of the 100 most famous or the most exciting or even the quote best books. As for the, quote, greatest books, I have frequently questioned throughout the essays the very concept of greatness. What do we really mean by this term when we use it? It is accepted easily and willingly enough, especially by some apparently cold-blooded but really sentimental academics who ought to know better. But is it not really just a catch-all for what excites and pleases me, what I think is the best? A means by which the drier kind of person can release feelings, the raw emotional crudity of which his intellect can hardly properly admit to possessing? Is it worth creating a whole new category of meaning in order to define this vague and vexing concept, greatness, more precisely? On the principle implied by the English philosopher William of Ockham, whose works are a very near miss in terms of this selection, that entities should not be multiplied, that we should not create unnecessary complications by introducing hypotheses that, upon reflection, we can do without. Evidently, it is not. Some, of course, might conceivably define greatness as simply the most influential, but this is not widespread. Some major thinkers did not even want to be influential, or at least they did not initially proceed as if they did. They needed to express the truth as it presented itself to them and be damned to its influence or otherwise. After they had finished their work, they might have then have started to think about greatness, but their first inspiration had not been polemical. Plato was possibly one of those, although he became increasingly polemical as he went along. So we'll just begin. The I Ching, or Yi Jin, number one. And from personal experience of with the I Ching, it is a living book. It is hard to explain. It is a guidance, an oracle. It is said to, the 64 hexagrams are said to represent all the possible events or possibilities of any given moment. That there's made of the 8 trigrams and the lines of each hexagram, so all that number combined is said to represent any possibility of any experience. So it's quite a concept to even try to talk about. The I Ching, again, it can be used as an oracle or a calendar. At one point I was had a line for the I Ching that was, the hedge opens, remorse disappears, a big wagon helps. And I had been living at a place that was on Hedges Lane. And at that time, I bought a small truck. So here are these lines and this guidance from at least 500 something BC. But the teachings go way farther back than that. So, And it still applies. It's timeless. And number two, the Old Testament. Number three, the Iliad and the Odyssey, Homer. Number four, the Upanishads. Number five, again, the Chinese philosophy, Lao Tzu, the Way and Its Power, the Tao Te Ching, or Tao Te Jin. Again, a book that is a living energy. It is guidance. It is alive. It is the words trying to convey the reality, and it is also the reality in its way. The Avesta, which is, don't know much about that, but that has to do with Iranian religion, Zoroastrianism. I have heard both of the dark side of Zoroastrianism, the dualistic approach, and also of a positive side of Zoroastrian, perhaps connecting with the Aster, like the stars, and perhaps there is a level that is of a unified, heightened awareness. The Analects by Confucius, History of the Peloponnesian War, pronounce the Greek name, Thucydides, and 9 and 10 are both, are Greek too, Works by Hippocrates and Works by Aristotle. Number 11, History, Herodotus. Here's one I read back in, I think, college, Plato's The Republic. Euclid, The Elements, The Dhammapada. The Dharma Path, or the Pada, I think, means the feet, so the Dharma Path. The Virgil, the Aeneid. I remember my nephew telling me about that when he was reading about it in high school. Lucretius on the Nature of Reality, Allegorical Expositions of the Holy Laws, Philo of Alexandria, the New Testament, Lives, Plutarch, Annals from the Death of the Divine Augustus by Cornelius Tacitus, not familiar with that, the Gospel of Truth, number 21. Now, as much as I've read and think I know stuff, when I see this list, so far, most of these I have heard of a lot of them, but have not read hardly any of them. The Gospel of Truth, that's pegged at around 1st century common era. Says, this gospel is non-canonical, missing from the New Testament. It is known by its opening, the Gospel of Truth is joy. Well, hey, I like the start of that. Meditations, Marcus Aurelius. Another one I haven't heard of. Outlines of Pyrrhonism, Sextus Empiricus. This is 150 to 210 common era. Greek physician and philosopher whose birthplace is unknown. Empirical school of doctors, nothing more is known of him. 24, Aeneids, Plotinus. 25, Confessions, Augustine of Hippo. The Koran at 26, Guide for the Perplexed, Moses Maimonides. Continuing outside now, in case you hear the background noises, the birds chirping and such like. And number 28, the Kabbalah. Interesting selection, and even mentioned in the introduction. I was going to comment on it, but read what they say. This is often spelled in its Spanish form as Kabbalah, C-A-B-A-L-A, C-A-B-B-A-L-A, also Q-U-A-B-A-L-A. There's a variety of other spellings. Nor in a book devoted to books is it by any means a book. So yeah, there you have it. The Kabbalah, akin to the Tao and the Yi Jin, it's a living entity. And also, with the Kabbalah means receive teaching or personally receive teaching. So any book about Kabbalah or on Kabbalah can only, by definition, be a guidebook and not, you know, in essence, be Kabbalah itself, so it is a living practice. The most cited book is the Zohar, Z-O-H-A-R, that being of Hebraic tradition. Another book here mentioned, Bahir, B-A-H-I-R. So there's sometimes a thin line between the Jewish mysticism and religiosity, but Kabbalah in its pure form is non-religious. It's a mysticism. And here, Bahir in Hebrew means shining. That's nice. And yeah, it's nice that this book recognizes it. One could write infinitely about the Kabbalah, which is a living thing. I have been justified in calling it a book, although really it is a series of books, the most important which I have listed here, because outsiders cannot come in contact with it without reading at least exegeses of it. That's one of those words I always gotta look up. It is not irrelevant that it has been the subject of a movie, Sidney Lumet's A Stranger Among Us. This in itself offers a dubious guide, but it might have sent someone to a study of the real Kabbalah. Alright, 29. Summa Theologiae. Theologiae. Thomas Aquinas. 1266 to 1273. I guess that was written then, not his lifespan. Otherwise, he would have been genius by age 7. And Dante, the Divine Comedy, coming in at number 31. In Praise of Folly, Desiderius Erasmus. The Dutch name of Erasmus was Gerhard, which in Latin means beloved, hence the name Desiderius, chosen by himself, because this is what he called his father, by which he is known to us. The Prince, Niccolo Machiavelli, that's pretty well known. 33, Martin Luther on the Babylonian captivity of the church. 34, Francois Rabelais, Gargantua and Pantagruel. Some of these I have never heard of, that's one of them.
Institutes of the Christian Religion, John Calvin, On the Revolution of the Celestial Orbs, Nicholas Copernicus, Essays by Michael Equiem de Montaigne, 38, here's one I recognize, Miguel de Cervantes, Don Quixote, Parts 1 and 2, Johannes Kepler, The Harmony of the World, Francis Bacon, Novum Organum, William Shakespeare, 41, The First Folio, not sure what that refers to, surprised some of Shakespeare's plays aren't in here. Here we go. The First Folio, published in 1623, contains all of Shakespeare's plays, 36 of which, exactly half, had not previously been published as single quarto texts, except for Pericles, which we will nonetheless understand as included here. The poems, the sonnets in particular, appeared in quarto editions during Shakespeare's lifetime, but we will include them too. 42. Dialogue concerning two new chief world systems, Galileo Galilei. Discourse on Method, René Descartes. 44. Leviathan, Thomas Hobbes. Works, Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz. Pensées, Blaise Pascal. Ethics, Baruch de Spinoza. Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. Isaac Newton, Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, coming in at 49. I wanted to mention, let's get to 50, and then I'll mention 50. Essay Concerning Human Understanding, John Locke. With an E, that's number 50. I wanted to mention that, having mentioned the native, some of the native writings a while back, that also to consider, you know, the again, not only influential being important on this book's title, but books itself, because a lot of the native indigenous traditions are oral traditions, so you have a humongous amount of influential knowledge and wisdom being passed down that is not in a book. And you know, in its way, that holds true with the Tao, Kabbalah, etc. So the book knowledge is kind of like that saying, the teacher opens the door, but the student must walk through. The book kind of opens the door. And now we get into the next 50, The Principles of Human Knowledge, George Berkeley. The New Science, Giambattista Vico. The Treatise of Human Nature, David Hume. The Encyclopedia, Denis Diderot, editor. The Dictionary of the English Language, Samuel Johnson. There's a quite humorous Blackadder III story about that one. Candide, François-Marie de Voltaire. 57, Thomas Paine, Common Sense. An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith. Still see him quoted in economic articles today on the internet. The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Edward Gibbon. I think I've heard of that one. That reminds of one of the greatest sitcom series ever, the Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin. 60, Critique of Pure Reason, Immanuel Kant. 61, Confessions, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. As you can tell, a lot of European influence here. Reflections on the Revolution in France, Edmund Burke. Vindication of the Rights of Woman, Mary Wollstonecraft. William Godwin, An Inquiry Concerning Political Justice. We still need that inquiry. An Essay on the Principle of Population, Thomas Robert Malthus. Now that's interesting. I recently saw that quoted in some article about overpopulation, some stuff that Bill Gates and other people are doing and talking about Malthusian. I'm not sure what Malthus was talking about, but I'm certainly of the school of control population growth. For various reasons, but more strongly nowadays with the amount of resources, that is one of the simplest, clearest ways to cut back on resources is less people to have to supply for. Phenomenology of Spirit, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. That sounds interesting. 67, The World as Will and Idea, Arthur Schopenhauer. Course in the Positivist Philosophy, Auguste Comte. On War, Karl Marie von Clausewitz. Not a book I I'll probably read, but the what is that? The Chinese classic, something about the art of war or something. But part that interests me more recently is seeing it references the strategy parts. But for now, the Tao suffices as living strategy. Either / or by Soren Kierkegaard, with a line in his Soren Kierkegaard, the Manifesto of the Communist Party, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. Yeah, I would have thought that would have been higher up on the charts. Civil Disobedience, Henry David Thoreau. The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, Charles Darwin. On Liberty, John Stuart Mill. First Principles, Herbert Spencer. Yeah, this one's interesting. Experiments with Plant Hybrids, Gregor Mendel. Being that it's spring and the gardening season is underway, we gotta check out this stuff here. The Proceedings of the Brno, BRNO, Society for the Study of Natural Science. Yada yada, 1866. This would take some reading to see what this is even about. But anyhow, looks interesting. War and Peace, Leo Tolstoy. Treatise on Electricity and Magnetism, James Clerk Maxwell, 78. Another Nietzsche, Friedrich. There was a Friedrich a minute ago. Different Friedrich. Nietzsche, Thus Spake Zarathustra. Sigmund Freud, The Interpretation of Dreams. Pragmatism, William James. Relativity, Albert Einstein. The Mind and Society, Vilfredo Pareto. Psychological Types, Carl Gustav Jung at 84. I and Thou, Martin Buber. That's one I've heard quoted and referenced a lot. From what I've heard, it sounds like a rather inspirational piece. The Trial by Franz Kafka. The Logic of Scientific Discovery by Karl Popper. The General Theory of Employment, Interest, and Money, John Maynard Keynes. That one, I see his name quoted a lot recently. Keynesian. There's another economic guy whose name is escaping me at the moment. So I see these guys listed in articles nowadays, and that's somehow a way to learn stuff is, you know, backtracking. Jean-Paul Sartre, Being and Nothingness. That could be a Buddhist book title there. Friedrich von Hayek, The Road to Serfdom. An Austrian economist and would-be philosopher. Interesting label there. Interesting to know what he meant by the road to serfdom. You could use the road away from serfdom in this modern feudalistic era. Simone de Beauvoir, The Second Sex. Long pioneer feminist essay was originally issued in Paris in two volumes, 1953. Reappeared in its influential English translation. Second Sex remains the 20th century's best argued as well as most entertaining feminist book. Then there was The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. Coming in at 92, Cybernetics by Norbert Wiener. Mathematician. He is most famous as the coiner, or some say co-coiner, of the word cybernetics from the Greek word with a KYB, kybernetes, for governor or steersman. But that word, compare the closely related cyberspace, now a buzzword, is far better known than the mathematical and polymath who first used it. So interesting, the forwardness and backwardness of learning stuff. 93, George Orwell's 1984, that's proving to hold up. And since this book came out a bunch of years ago, that would probably go up the charts with its recent world shenanigans. George Ivanovich Gurdjieff, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. Very important mystic, Gurdjieff. Ludwig Wittgenstein, Philosophical Investigations. And coming in at 96, a book that I don't think I'd heard of, but of course the author, Noam Chomsky, Syntactic Structures. Interesting, they say here Noam is famous in America for three reasons. Best known in the world outside academia, he's best known as a kind of social anarchist, his term, and anarcho-syndicalist. The other ways, well, you know, he's a linguist. Here's a little paragraph. From turning to the human mind, we also find structures of marvelous intricacy developing in a uniform way with limited and unstructured experience. Language is a case in point, but not the only one. Capacities are no doubt unlearned in their essentials, deriving from biological endowment. We are fortunate to have this rich innate endowment, otherwise we would grow into, quote, mental amoeboids. So one thing, they're just rereading that, I realized that one of the joys and mind expanders of reading is that even, you know, it's not only communing with another human being, another person's connection with the, you know, thought, mind, thinking, awareness, insight, heart realization, whatever you call it. But, you know, it stirs ideas, even if you don't follow, like that paragraph I just read of Chomsky. I'd have to read it again to really see what it meant, but it just stirred me into another direction of, you know, capacities of learning and how the mind or how our experience can, you know, shift, and how we could see, you know, what's that that famous quote, to see the something in a grain of sand and hold the heaven in the palm of your hand, whatever that was, Blake. So how we can look into the minuscule and see everything, or look out into the cosmos and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, just sharing things can do that. 97, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, T.S. Kuhn. 98, Betty Friedan, The Feminist Mystique. 99, Mao Zedong, Quotations from Chairman Mao Zedong. And this is the opposite of those music shows where they give you the top hit. Well, number 100, Beyond Freedom and Dignity, B.F. Skinner. I think Skinner has some strange stuff about behaviorism, and it's all about the behavior rather than the that anybody had anything spontaneity, or that they have anything in them that is, you know, before they were born. And that is, according to this book, the 100 most influential books ever written. If anything, he triggers some other ideas and stirs me to think a little bit about, you know, some of my personal favorite books, or books that have affected me, or writing in general, or what it is that affects people. I think writers take on the mantle of, you know, realizing this power of a book that can literally shape minds and shape culture. It's almost like there's almost like this godlike draw to it, which can have that impact. And then again, it can just, you know, be something worth sharing, and it does what it does. And so the idea of this influential thinking and thoughts and books is wonderful. And yet again, as a lot of times with this show, in a kind of book non-book way, try to balance it with things that the Tao and the Kabbalah remind us of, that, you know, you still gotta walk your own trail, and you still have to have those ideas and thoughts that, you know, they're going to serve you. I don't mean in a selfish way, but things that are only applicable to your life, and that you're not going to find in a book. So we learn from them, books, and we learn without them too. So that'll about wrap it up, this book show. Thanks for listening.
I'm not sure what the oldest culture is with the actual books, but think of ancient Egypt with their papyrus or papyri, however the plural is. And so looked up on YouTube and see this song, Ancient Egypt Walk Like an Egyptian. I don't know if that's the title or what, but it sounds like a cool song, so that's what we will go out with.
They get strips of cloth and they rack it tight. Yep, pharaohs, We built the pyramids, we built the Sphinx. And then we wrote it down to hieroglyphics. Walk, walk like an Egyptian. Walk, walk like an Egyptian. We built the pyramids, we built the Sphinx. And then we wrote it down to hieroglyphics. What? I'm Osiris, Lord of the Dead. Don't mess with me, boy, I'll put a sword to your head. We fight invaders, effortlessly. Cause we're insulated by the desert and the seas. Harper and Lower, we're divided up. Yep, until Pharaoh Menes, he united us. In 3100 BC, he said, I want my son to be Pharaoh after me. I'll start a dynasty. King Tut died before he got old. But King Tut got a mask made of gold. So Pharaoh sit back, sip tea, and get rich while workers break their backs to build the pyramids. 50 stories tall, that's incredible. They use ramps to move stones so they handicap accessible. If you a Pharaoh whose last breath goes, you got buried in a pyramid like it's a gravestone. Walk, walk like an Egyptian. Walk, walk like an Egyptian. We built the pyramids, we built the Sphinx. And then we wrote it down in hieroglyphics. Walk, walk like an Egyptian. Walk, walk like an Egyptian. We built the pyramids, we built the Sphinx. And then we wrote it down in hieroglyphics. Fix, 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 fix.